Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by the monks and neighbors of the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Welcome, everyone.
Thanks, Michael.
How are you all doing?
Wonderful.
Great. I understand you're going to provide us with a retrospective of 2009.
Indeed, we are. So I wanted to give a tiny context to it. The other day we were having a call with Jan Letender, who I think we've probably mentioned before, does organizational coaching with the organization. We do a best year yet process with her each year. And she was walking us through some steps looking back at the last year and what's happened in the last year. And it was an extraordinary experience, as it often is, to just have a time to really look at, wow, all that really has happened in this last year. And as we were looking at that, we realized, you know, this huge amount of accomplishment is not just from this small group of people, you know, sitting in this room doing this call, but it's attributed to a much, much larger group, to the entire Sangha. And so we thought, hey, it would be awfully fun to share this list with folks on the radio show. So that's
great.
What we would do tonight.
Great. Let's hear it.
Okay, so we're just going to pass the phone around and start reading them out.
Okay, good.
We did a really great three-day peace-storming event where we helped out another organization here in our county.
Wonderful.
Pache learned to ask for what he wants without whining most of the time. he's the German Shepherd here.
Great. Thank you for the background.
We had our very first workshop via Skype so that people could participate from everywhere, and I think we had somebody from Copenhagen in the workshop.
Wow.
Last Christmas, as this coming Christmas season, we had a wonderful retreat at Santa Sabina, and all sorts of people stepped up to help really make that retreat work.
We made it through almost completely made it through the second year of Transform Your Life, which is a daily has a daily quote and a practice that Sherry wrote.
Right.
We had, I think it was 4 successful trips to Africa, and the blogs that go with that are still all available on our website.
Oh my goodness.
We had the second annual Living Compassion yard sale in Palo Alto.
Yes.
We did our first Green Week retreat here at the monastery, which was training folks how to live sustainably.
Great.
We did a month-long deepening practice training last April, which was fabulous.
Great.
We supported Sherry in going to the Social Venture Network Conference, which is a group of socially responsible CEOs and that sort of thing of companies, and to a retreat in Mexico on collaboration. And both of those have been extraordinary possibilities, created extraordinary possibilities for the work in Africa. And Sherry did some great networking there, which is creating real possibilities for us to expand our work.
Wonderful.
We started our monthly donor campaign for both the Living Compassion and the Zen Center, which is, I think, a huge benefit both to us and to the monthly donors.
Yes.
We got to greet Teresa as she came to the monastery for her first visit.
And it's captured on video.
We had our very first working meditation retreat at home.
Great.
We had a wonderful bridge walk, and not only Teresa was there, but Jackie Asombe was there too, and we did some great African dancing.
Yes, we did.
We put real windows on our meditation hut.
Great.
Thanks in large part to the new person, Mark, who is our facilities saint, who has been accomplishing really amazing things here.
Wonderful.
Groups started around the country and even in Europe focused on The Key by Shari Huber.
Yes, sitting groups everywhere.
We were feeding 400 children in Cantaloupe, and we are poised to feed 400 more, doubling our program.
Wonderful.
We had a bunch of really great events on the East Coast. We did a week-long retreat at Green Cove in North Carolina. We did a retreat at Southern Dharma Retreat Center in also North Carolina. And Shari did quite a number of things up and down the East Coast, too, in 2009.
Much of this was made possible by our campaign at the beginning of the year to keep the doors open, and many, many, many folks stepped forward to become regular donors of both the Zen Center and Living Compassion, and that's really allowed us to have a stable financial base even in these difficult financial times so that we can continue to offer the supports that we're offering to Sangha.
We have been very reliably posting a monthly peace practice on our website that people can participate in every month of the year.
So peaceful.
The monastery garden was filled with beautiful flowers and vegetables this year.
We began to refurbish some of our hermitages, painting them and redoing some of the decks, and it's inspired us to do even more of that.
They're lovely.
One of the supports we offered to Sangha was a four-month-long email class on making peace with money.
Yes, indeed.
We put out a daily peace quote, which is a quote from someone, anyone, relating to peace.
Great.
The team in Africa purchased and planted much of a huge garden, and are poised to buy a hammer mill to grind the corn that grows in the garden.
Yes. And all the details are on the blog.
People worked hard at getting Teresa successfully to America.
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
Midway through this year was the Voices Cartoon's first year anniversary, which was celebrated by the completion of 10 handmade books, which were auctioned off.
Yes. Here at the monastery alone, we sat thousands of times. As a group, we had hundreds of group discussions, and we had numerous guidance appointments. And then if you factor in all of the extended Sangha all through the world this year, wow, what an accomplishment that is. All the sits, all the good practices being done.
That's big. That's big.
Well, I'm looking at my watch, Michael, and seeing we're running out of time, so I'm going to lump together a really big one, which is that I feel like the Sangha took a huge, deepening step this year, starting with Shari, the guide, making a large transition into a larger role and really inviting the organization, starting with the monks at the monastery and then out to the board and then really out to the whole Sangha into taking a deeper responsibility in each of our own practice and practice as a whole, as a group. And through that, offering an amazing email class that just ended and this practice support that's coming up, practice everywhere, and just in general really bringing practice, it feels like, to a really bigger level than we've had it before.
Yes, indeed.
We really increased our Africa sponsorship program so that a lot of those little faces have someone behind them supporting the program in Africa.
Yes.
New facilitators began training both here at the monastery and all actually worldwide.
We had peaches and apples and peaches and apples on our fruit trees this year.
We continued the Reflective Listening Buddies program.
Yeah.
We chopped up several or at least a few trees that fell on different roads and pathways, and I'm aware of one more that needs to be done. Almost all the way to the creek. It's a really big tree blocking the path.
Oh, my goodness.
And I haven't posted a note yet.
Brought to us, no doubt, by the lovely snowstorm that we had just a few days ago, that it was really one of those. It was a classic to welcome Dave and Alex back from warm Africa to snow-covered Murphy's.
Yes, yes, great.
We just finished the What You Practice email class with Sherry.
Yes.
We have three monks here at the monastery who have stepped up in higher responsibilities.
Wonderful.
We successfully completed several. I'm not sure how many. There is nothing wrong with your retreats.
Great.
Let's see. Sherry did workshops in any number of places, including Mount Madonna, one in Berkeley, the Center for Spiritual Enlightenment, at Esalen, at Yogaville, up in Canada, just all over the place.
The monastery continues to turn out hundreds of yummy meals, including, I think, a particularly good new summer menu.
Oh, yummy.
We completed a great precepts retreat with a large number of people attending.
Great.
We've sent out lots of lovely, beautiful emails this year with lovely photographs and inspiring concepts.
They're beautiful.
We have lumber in place to start constructing an office for Sherry.
We raised around $100,000 at the Bridgewalk for the program in Cantalumba.
Yay.
Pache, the dog, and Sadie, the dog, have deepened their friendship and have become totally entertaining in the way they entertain one another.
Good.
We set up several new solar panels to increase our charging capacity on our energy system.
Great.
Well, Michael, I think we've scratched the surface at least, and I realize it's time for the radio show, isn't it?
It is time for the radio show, and I am amazed at the fact that all of that happened in 2009.
Yeah, and, you know, when I look at it, it feels like the, you know, there are a couple of them that really point at it. You know, all that sitting that Dave was referring to, and the support that the practice gets from the guide on down, you know, to the monks and from all the Sangha, and then the support that comes back up from the Sangha, those feel like the things that really, you know, make all of it happen, because this number of things should not be possible with this number of people, and yet somehow it happens. So that's really, you know, that's our way of saying thank you to everyone for helping us to make it all happen. It's a wonderful way to live a life.
It is a wonderful way to live a life, indeed. And thank you all so much for joining us tonight.
Have a great show.
We will. Good night.
Night.
Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael.
How are you?
Good. Well, that was breathtaking.
It was breathtaking.
You wouldn't think those people would have strength enough to even read through a list like that. It's like it's magical. It really is. As Jen said it perfectly, you know, it shouldn't be possible, and yet
yes,
it is. And year after year after year, it expands. Even more is added. You know, it's kind of crazy, but it's such a perfect expression of what practice does in people's lives.
It
you know,
is.
Because this is a, you know, this is a group of people who more than just about anybody doesn't turn their life over to an endless, useless conversation about suffering that would go on in their heads if they would let it. And so all of the time that's not wasted with melodrama and hysteria and angst and all of those things gets put into participation, into serving life. And when there's that kind of full attention to doing what life is calling us to do right now, this moment, this moment, this moment, extraordinary things happen.
Yes, they do. And as you said, they happen seemingly over and over and over again.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. I always go to those kinds of places of, wow, what if, is there a tipping point? How many more people can we get? How many would it take before the whole world tipped over into, you know, let's just take care of life. Let's just take care of each other and nature, and let's bring all the compassionate awareness we can to everything that we do all the time, and just find out how truly joyful it is to live a human life. We can do it.
We can do it. We are doing it.
Doing it, yeah, yeah. Especially those folks.
Sherry, I'm going to save some announcements for later.
Okay.
Because we have a big, long list of people here.
Good. The one thing I want to say before we leave that, though, is that I'm hoping next week, if we have a show, I hope the next one is on Practice Everywhere, because we really need to bring people on board with where we are with that, so that this is one of the things that we'll look back on 2010 and say, and we completed a year, next New Year, we completed a year of Practice Everywhere, but we have to get people on board with what that means and how they can participate. So I'm putting in a plug for that.
Okay, great, great. Do you want to say any more about it right now?
No, just people, I hope that people will know that it's coming, and more information is coming out about it, and we hope to get at least the people who are going to be listening to this radio show and getting regular emails and that sort of thing, they're going to be ready with all the information they need to hop on board on January 1st. Because it's one of those things, you want to be there on the ground floor. You want to be one of the first.
Yes.
Certainly the first on your block to participate in this, what I hope is a great thing.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Okay, let's go to our callers. First caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Jeffrey from New York City.
Jeffrey. How are
Hello.
You?
Good. I was on the call last week, but didn't get to talk to you.
I suspected that might have been going on. So I'm glad glad you were persistent.
Yes, I made sure this time.
Good, good. So how are you doing this evening?
Things are okay. I had a homework assignment.
Yes, you did.
I've been making an appointment with the sadness that I've been feeling lately, and it seems like the overwhelming majority of the energy is in my throat and sort of in my chest. So
uh-huh.
I would say the fifth, no,
uh-huh.
Whichever one is in the throat, and then the heart chakra.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we were talking about moving some of that energy.
Uh-huh. And how did that go?
Okay. I don't know. You said you might have some specific exercises for how to do those particular areas.
Yeah, yeah. And so I'll tell you about those, and then I want to hear, because it was part of it that you spent time with that sad person and had little conversations and that sort of thing?
Yes.
Did you do some of that?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right. Then maybe you'll tell me in a minute what you learned.
Yes.
But one of the things, two very simple things that you can do for whatever chakra, but because you're dealing with the heart chakra, the fourth chakra, which is the color for that one is green. And so whenever you are out in nature, particularly, although it doesn't seem to be affected by you could paint your door green and do the exercise and it would accomplish the same thing. What you do is just be aware of breathing that green into your heart so that every chance you get, you sort of fill and surround your heart with the color green. Okay, and do the same thing with your throat, only the color is blue. So every time you see the color blue, when you see the sky, if the sky is blue, then breathe it in. But again, in any kind of any shade of blue, just breathe that into your throat. Okay.
Yeah.
Now I, to tell you the truth, don't know why that works, but it does. And my best guess is that it's a combination, that part of the body, that chakra, really resonates. It's like that's the color that it is that speaks to it. Okay. So there's that. But I suspect that an equal part is that you are turning your attention to it regularly all day long.
Yeah.
And that's the part that makes a difference on the just kind of technical level, or there's a word that is escaping me. But it's not. There's nothing psychological about it. There's nothing. There's nothing. It's mechanical. It's like a mechanical thing. So if you're really upset about something and your heart is racing and your breath is shallow, you know, you can get into a whole, oh God, what's going on? I need to calm down. Or you could just lie down and focus all of your attention and awareness on long, full, slow breaths, and your body would calm down. So it's like that. It's a mechanical support for the emotional, mental, spiritual stuff that's also going on with you.
Yes. Yes. One thing I noticed making appointments with that little person with this sadness is that I was really able to drop a belief that I'm a victim to my emotions, or I noticed that I have that belief, you know?
Yes, which is important, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's huge to know that sort of thing. Yeah.
Because I'm going through this big transition, and the story is that I will cry at almost anything, you know, and it's sort of this victim mentality, you know?
Uh-huh. Kind of a why me?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. And does that feel different from the little person who is sad?
Yes, it does.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause just when I hear it, you know, if I think about being little and I lose something I really love, or something that I have breaks or is taken away from me or whatever, it's very sad and I'm very upset. But I would have to be a lot older before I took it personally and that it meant something about me and that I was a victim to something. To me, that's a much more sophisticated, older kind of reaction to life.
Yeah, and it almost seems like I can do something about the little person.
Yes.
But the other one, it seems endless. I mean, that could just go on forever.
Yes. And to me, the importance of seeing that clearly is that often that feeling like a victim believing I'm a victim is put in place to enable me, give me permission to victimize others. So, in other words, life has done me wrong, so I'm really owed. Everything and everybody owes me, and I'm justified in doing anything to get what I'm owed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is a dangerous place to be.
Yeah. And I noticed that it could also enable me to continue to victimize different parts of myself.
Precisely. And in fact, that is a critical awareness. Because very often, that one who is doing the victim part will use the little person and the little person's sadness to justify that position. Which when we really see that clearly, it's the only word that comes to me for it is ugly. You know, that I would use the pain of a small child to justify a position that I'm holding.
Yeah, and a set of beliefs that go along with that.
Yeah. So it's not that we don't want to work with all of the folks who are involved, but the first one is the one who has the most authentic, legitimate experience. And that sounds like that's the little person who feels sad.
Yeah, and can you give me some suggestions about connecting with that?
Yeah,
I've been learning myself.
Yeah. So, let me ask you this. What have you done so far to take care of him?
When I'm able to, we schedule an appointment. I've been scheduling appointments to be with the sadness, which means talking to that little guy and experiencing the emotion of it instead of experiencing the story about victimhood and
yes. Yeah.
So I've been doing that, and I've also been doing my best to invite him along, because part of it is feeling this, what's going on in my life was not my choice, so part of it is about feeling not included.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Feeling very powerless and...
Yeah, and so, of course, this is a great time for the two of you to seek comfort from one another. Because as long as you recognize that the two of you are together, neither of you is alone. Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah, and so you can learn, you can take this as an opportunity to learn to enjoy yourself in the way that, you know, we're taught to believe somebody else has to enjoy us for life to be worth living.
Yeah. And right now the practice for me is about just being able to do that. There's a lot of opposition to that.
Yes. Well, now there's another really important one, because anything inside us that is resistant to that, we can know that that's egocentric karmic conditioning.
Yeah.
Because nobody who legitimately cares for you would want anything other than for you to find all the love and care and compassion and connection and sense of belonging that you can have.
Yeah.
So,
good point.
Yeah. So what wants you to suffer, what wants you not to find comfort or solace or companionship or whatever it is, keep a sharp eye on that, because that's egocentric karmic conditioning / self-hatred. And of course, it circles like a vulture with something like this.
I've noticed. And there is a time when I'm very, very vulnerable. Mm-hmm. I've not been sleeping well because of it.
Mm-hmm.
And in the early morning, I'll wake up at 3 or 4 in the morning, and it will begin, and I'm in a very, receptive place
mm-hmm.
for the stories about all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any guidance about that time?
Well, that's when you to me, it's really important that you get that who that's being done to is that little guy. And that it's going to be up to you to protect him from that kind of abuse. And so one of the simplest, quickest ways to accomplish that is for the two of you to get into a conversation that is so complete and all-consuming that there's no room for listening to the voices of the vultures circling around trying to inflict pain and suffering. Yeah, so you're talking to him. You're reassuring him. You're comforting him. You're telling him what is really true about who he is and what his life is like and how you feel about him and your commitment to being with him and caring for him and helping him have the best life that a human being can possibly have. And you just go on like that until one or the other of you falls asleep.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
You are very welcome. Keep me posted, huh?
Got it.
Good night, Jeffrey.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Jeffrey. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, I have a couple of announcements here, and then we're going to have a sponsor break. So we've just finished an email class with you,
mm-hmm.
and there will be a new class starting in February
yes.
titled The Bizarre Tapestry of Misinformation, The Movie.
Yes.
Registration will begin in early January, and watch the website for those details.
Yes.
Wednesday, December 23rd is the last day to register for the next quarter of Reflective Listening Buddies.
An excellent program.
Coming up on January 9th is another one of the very popular one-day at-home working meditation retreats.
When is that?
January 9th.
Right. Put that on my calendar.
Yes. And then at the end of the month, on January 30th in Palo Alto, we'll have the annual Best Year Yet workshop.
Hmm. And reports, hopefully, on the next group of children who have been added to the project in Cantalomba.
Great.
Because there will be a little Africa trip in between those two dates.
Oh, my goodness. That's exciting. And the last thing I want to mention is that if you are looking for holiday gift ideas, check out the Living Compassion website. They're beautiful holiday cards to support our work in Zambia, as you just mentioned. And there's also a monk's wish list for items the Zen Monastery Peace Center could benefit from.
Ah. So gift giving for others
yes.
and for your favorite monks and monastery.
Yes. Not to mention yourself.
And yourself. Exactly. Well, it's all for ourselves, isn't it?
It is. It is, as you have kindly pointed out to us many times.
Fortunately, I'm not sensitive about repeating myself.
Great. Sherry, we're going to have a sponsor break, and then we'll be right back.
Thanks, Michael.
Watchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
By Trish Bruxford Colligan gives voice to what Simply Celebrate is all about. Opening to rivers of joy, listening to our hearts, trusting ourselves and our lives. Simply Celebrate is a book and business that grew out of gratitude for the work of Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha. We use the practice as a foundation for helping people wake up to all the joy, spontaneity, color, and connection that is available in every moment. Please visit simplycelebrate.net.
What if you swam in a river of joy?
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have many more callers here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. It's Todd.
Hey, Todd.
Hi.
Hey, Sherry. Hey, Michael.
What's going on?
Well, we spoke last week at the tail end of the call. We had 3 minutes. And the encouragement was, call back, but call back early.
Right.
And I got home early and got the dinner settled and, you know, the kids settled and the homework and all that. And then I called in early, and here we are.
All right, good.
So that's a wonderful thing. A couple of things I'm looking at. I really enjoyed the good news because my conditioning is always telling me that I have a very poor practice. It's very inconsistent. It's not very committed. And I'm listening to good news, and I'm saying, wow, I participated in that. Gee,
right.
I did that. Wow, I did, you know. And they're going down the list, and I'm going, well, yeah, I did that. I joined that program, and I'm like, conditioning.
Uh-huh. You have bad information. You know, Todd, that's the reason that we all love Best Year Yet the way we do, because that's such a big part of it. You know, we always start out acknowledging everything that we have accomplished, because otherwise, you're right, conditioning will just say, you never did anything. You never do anything. You just me, 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 me.
Yep.
That's
my conditioning.
It's not true. It's a big liar.
It's not true that big liars constantly telling me that I have a very poor practice and a very weak practice. And I haven't attended a Best Year Yet, but that's an aspiration. That would be really exciting to attend a Best Year Yet workshop. That would be really fun. But one of my aspirations now is before the New Year's to sit in my journal and write out exactly good news is all the things I participated in and experienced in the awareness practice this year.
Oh, good for you.
So with conditioning has its little quip, I can go to the journal and go, really? Well, let's take a look.
Yeah.
So that was really fun.
Yeah, good.
Yeah. And what I was going to talk to you about last week, but we did an abbreviated version of it, was what's coming up for me in my practice lately is in the daily recollection, there's one point that kind of stops me, and it's in the 10 grade prohibited precepts, and it's not to be avaricious and bestowal of the teachings. Would you be able to say what that
what
might be?
What the heck
that?
Does that mean?
That, sorry, Sherry, for the life of me, I can't figure it out.
Well,
not that
you
I need
know,
to,
I'd
love to know what it's pointing at.
It's really one of the things that I like best about our precepts retreat and our precepts is that we each get to have our own experience of whatever it is. Mm. And of course, that our experience changes over time. But just generally kind of a place to look is not to use the teachings for personal gain.
Yeah.
And that can be, now people immediately think, oh, well, so, you know, you should never have money be a part of spiritual practice. But that's not
the point. At least not as far as I'm concerned, because, you know, religious people need to eat too.
Yes.
But more, it's not selling practice. So there's a way that we can, you know, you're offered practice through our Sangha. You support the Sangha. So you support the monks and the monastery and the teachings and that sort of thing as they support you. And it's a give and take. It's a mutual sharing. It's our relationship with people in Cantalomba. You know, we have material resources. They don't. They have big hearts and a lot of energy and things that they want to accomplish, things that we want to accomplish. And so we work together, each of us bringing what it is that we have in abundance. And when we put that together, then we accomplish something that we couldn't have accomplished on our own.
Yeah.
So that's one piece of it. And so it's that greediness or selfishness about teaching. And sometimes it can even slide over into someone wanting to keep the practice for themselves and not let other people know about it because maybe they'll get ahead of them spiritually.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So there can be lots of ways that we get that we get greedy about the teachings, greedy to benefit ourselves. Yeah, and I think that's a good kind of a good ballpark place to be looking.
That's wonderful. Yeah, it always kind of stops me because I'm like, what is that pointing out? You know,
right.
Most of the precepts, and you know, I haven't been on a precept retreat, which is another big aspiration, but I do the daily recollection every morning, and I hit that one, and I go, okay, now what the heck are they talking about? I've got to ask Sherry, and I've been wanting to ask you for months and months and months, and I haven't gotten through.
Yeah.
And what is coming up for me is, in my own practice and with my 15-year-old son and my wife, who sort of dabbled, she's read all your books, and she sits periodically, and she's aspired to go to There's Nothing Wrong With You three or four times, and conditioning has talked her out of it. How much, because I know the Buddha pointed, must work out our own salvation diligently, how much can I support, and I don't even want to go so far as to guide her in encouraging her that I'm suffering a lot less. I'm sure she'll see that through modeling, but how far can I go to be actively in as song as supporting her practice when she's suffering a lot and there's a lot of other behaviors that wouldn't necessarily... Do you see what I'm kind of getting at?
Oh, yeah.
Without publishing people's fault and
controlling
oneself and slandering others. I've got all those in my head, too, so
it's
hard.
Yeah, it's really tricky. And, you know, one of the... people were talking earlier about the accomplishments and that sort of thing. Wherever I go, whenever I go around and talk to people, two things that people talk about a lot as strong supports for practice. One, the archives of this show, and two, reflective listening buddies. And so that, to me, is the skill that you can offer, the reflective listening.
Beautiful.
And not that you're going to con her or try to make her, you know, fool her into thinking you're not reflecting her, not that at all.
Yes.
You know, but just flat out to say, honey, you know, I'm here. You want to talk? I want to reflect. I want to listen to you. I want to hear you. And I know you're completely adequate to your own life. And so, you know, like that. And of course, the temptation is huge for us to just slide over into that. Well, here, let me help you out. And I can attest, and I bet you can too, that it's just almost never popular.
It's been very unpopular in my experience to even do that.
Yes.
I've been, it's caused a lot of problems.
Yeah.
And I step back to the line of, I do reflect as much as I can, almost all the time with my son. I do tell my wife, you know, let's do reflective listening, or she'll get kind of heated, and I'll say, may I just reflect that back? I just want to be here. May I reflect that back? And sometimes your condition will say no.
Yeah.
And she'll leave the room, and other times she'll come to me and say, you know, can we talk now? I said, but I'd like to reflect that back. And she'll go, okay.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
So I really use that tool. And the second thing is, I do mention the archives all the time, and I do mention that on Tuesday nights, I make it a real point for me to make that commitment to listen or aspire to phone in. So there's the modeling there that you're talking about.
Yeah, Yeah, which is
and of course I'm on reflective listening buddies too. So.
Yeah, which is the best that we can
do
for our loved ones. Just
it's the best we can do.
Yeah, practice as best we can, and
okay.
And there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and know that that we're all equal to our lives.
We're all equal to our lives because there's a little part of me that I'm mentoring, and I'm journaling with that feels responsible for her life.
Oh, absolutely. When we love someone, that's exactly what we do with a spouse, a partner. That's one thing. Boy, toss in kids.
Child,
you
know, teenager,
It's just very hard for us to say, maybe you are equal to your life. Maybe I don't know better what you should be doing or how, you know, it's very, very hard because our hearts are invested.
Yes. Our hearts are very invested. Yeah.
Yeah.
This has been very helpful.
Oh, good. Good.
Very
Thank
helpful,
you.
Sherry.
Thank
you.
Take care.
And, really...
and Todd, stay warm.
Yes, but stay warm. You know, we have a Chinook. You know what a Chinook is? A warm.
Yeah.
We have a warming trend.
Oh,
yeah. We're up to 40 Fahrenheit from minus 40 to 40 Fahrenheit.
Oh, my God.
Can you believe that? In 2 days.
You're
can
out
you
there in
that?
Tank tops working on your
team. Well, we're putting the lawn furniture back out on the ground. Well, there's 2 feet of snow, but if we could, we would.
Yeah.
Yeah, we get crazy climates here because we're right by the mountains. But I'm looking forward to the New Year's Eve retreat, and I can't wait.
Oh, me too.
Well,
me too. See
you
all
see folks
you there.
Then.
Okay, thanks, Tom.
Thanks again. Thank you, Michael.
You're
Good
welcome.
Night.
Good night.
Good night. Thanks for joining us, Todd. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Ready for another caller, Sherry?
Yes, please.
Okay. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Yes, this is Nancy in Driftwood.
Hey, Nancy.
Well, howdy.
Driftwood. I love that, Driftwood.
I do, too.
Drifting along with the tumbling tumbleweed, or...
No, we're too far east for tumbleweeds.
Because Driftwood, you know, we think of that as an ocean sort of thing.
A very long time ago, this was an ocean.
And so you've still got the reminders of that in your Driftwood.
As I understand it, the church and cemetery, which our community consists of, were named after a very large flood.
I see. Okay.
But I like to think of it as limestone, which we are.
Great limestone bedded flood city
coral
or something.
Creatures. Okay,
So, aside from that, what did you call about?
I called about something that has me so terrified that I kept hoping I wouldn't be called on, and my stomach is just in knots. And I don't exactly know how to describe it as a process rather than content, so maybe you can help me with that. And part of what's going on, I don't know how to stay away from content. But something happened when I was very young, and to even and recurs, I guess, karmically in my sex life. And I just, right now, it just feels like that very young child is, I'm going to expose her to shame and criticism and ridicule. And
okay, so how is that going to happen? You mean you, the person...
Even by talking about this at all, by in any way bringing up this recurring issue.
Okay.
Because it started with her, and so somehow to even try to address it feels like attacking that child or putting her at risk.
Uh-huh. Okay. Now, first of all, for the record, I don't buy that.
Okay.
So my intuition about it is that as we were talking earlier with Jeffrey, when I said somebody will use the pain of a little person for their own benefit, I'm very suspicious that there is someone who is holding this in place for their own benefit. Because
some part of me.
We don't know.
Well, something. Okay.
We don't know what it is. But a small child who has been injured is going to be reticent about a relationship. He's going to be cautious. Okay, you're going to have to win her trust. Right?
Reticent about a relationship with me.
Yes, with anybody.
Okay.
With anybody. Because what generally happens, the way it usually goes, child experiences a trauma and just gets stuck there. So how old were you when this happened?
I think from about 6 months to 5 years.
Okay. So at age five, someone moved on. So there's the 6 months, 5 years, okay? And then something happened at age five, and a change occurred. So so a different person was there. Now, we could just, for the sake of ease, we could call that person the person who survived that trauma.
Mm-hmm.
The survivor, then, is the person. Now there we have the little girl, little survivor. And everybody before that, it just got put away in a dark room somewhere.
Yes, it very much feels like we're approaching the dark room right now.
Yeah, so that little injured person got left behind. So if we stay with that, you know, it's a big walk-in closet and the door has been closed for a long time. Yeah? And so here comes somebody who wants to help, support, love, care for, embrace, reconcile with this little girl. And that door opens, and that child is naturally going to start finding a corner to get back into because there hasn't been anybody there for all that time. There hasn't been anybody to care for her. She just got left there as everybody else went on to survive. Which is fine. You know, that's as it should be. You needed to survive.
Mm-hmm.
You with me?
Yes,
okay.
I am.
All right, so there you are now, your most centered, compassionate, loving, kind self. And you want to have a relationship with this child. So you essentially, you know, you get it. Opening the door makes her feel unsafe. So you just sit down outside the door and you begin to talk with her. And you talk with her. And you tell
so the triggering event outside of my life, I mean outside of this conversation with this part of me, I can just separate those things.
Oh, that's irrelevant, immaterial at this point.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
It's irrelevant. The good part about that, the benefit of that trigger, is that you are required to go back and get that child.
Yes, I've been trying to look at it that way this time.
Yep.
That this is actually a good thing.
Yes.
Not a bad thing that's happening.
Oh, it is such a good thing. It is such a good thing.
I just feel some of the clenching.
Okay,
releasing.
Now stay with me here, okay? So there you are, and your commitment is to sit down outside that door and just be with that child. Somebody was telling me the other day about she had a cat and she took in or, you know, adopted or whatever, a feral cat. And 9 years later, 9 years later, she was sick and the cat came and sat on her lap for the first time. So she's been caring for this creature for 9 years, right? So we're talking patience. It's not going to take that long with that child. But we're talking no expectations, no demands. You're just there. And what you're talking to her about is how sorry you are that this happened and how devoted you are to creating a safe place for her to be and that you want to take care of her. And at a certain point, she is going to want that relationship because she has wanted that relationship all of her life. Yeah. So at a certain
right.
Uh-huh. That'll tip over. Okay. So what she has wanted all of her life, she sees that there's a possibility of getting it, and she's going to want that, and she's going to then be open to being in relationship with you. Now, again, as with what we were talking about in the earlier call, what wants to stop that is not anything authentic.
I think I'll just get in touch with her terror and see that as what wants me to go away and stop it, if that makes sense.
Yes. I don't think that's it. But it's
okay.
A good place to start exploring. And the thing is, you know, you're picturing all this in your mind, right? So there's that little girl, and what you're doing is going to the clearest, most centered place that you can get to.
Mm-hmm.
So that you are truly the compassionate presence that is going to embrace that child. That's who you are.
Yes, and this is so helpful because I felt like I had to untangle this part and the external situation
yeah.
at the same time, and
right.
I didn't see how to do that.
Yeah, yeah, good, because you don't. You know,
down
the road, here's how I predict it'll go if you stay with this program. At a certain point, the relationship that you have with that little girl will be so solid that something that previously would have been threatening happens, and she just looks directly to you. It doesn't even particularly phase her. You two just look at each other, and you know that you are capable of handling anything that comes at either one of you.
So, I guess my question is, the external triggering events that happen every few years that I never have felt like I was asking for, but if they're the key to sitting down and making friends with this child, that's great. Is there any sense that they'll just sort of fall away?
We don't know. But the thing is, when your relationship with her is really solid, it won't actually matter.
Oh, that's so great. What a relief.
Yeah. It won't matter.
Okay, well, I can do that.
Yes, you can. And I'll tell you, she is just going to be so doggone happy and excited about this, as will you be.
That's great. Thank you.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Keep us posted.
I will do that.
All right.
Thanks for coming.
Thanks, Nancy.
Thanks for joining us, Nancy. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, there's some inspiring people out there.
I'm telling you. Doing great work.
Doing great, fabulous work. Unbelievable.
And we know them.
And we know them, and we hear from them regularly.
Yeah.
We're going to have a stop, drop, and break, and then we will be right back.
All right, thanks.
If you suddenly find yourself believing the voices in your head, don't panic. Just remember these three easy steps. Stop, drop, and breathe. That sequence again is stop, drop, and breathe. This public service announcement is brought to you by VoiceBusters Incorporated, purveyors of the finest practice tools and reminders since 2008. Visit us on the World Wide Web at thevoicescartoons.com. O-R-G.
Stop, drop, and breathe. Stop, drop, and breathe.
Uh-huh. Welcome. Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have more callers here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Anna from Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Hey, Anna.
Hi.
How's things in the frozen northeast?
That's pretty funny because it was actually, you know, I was having a conversation today with someone being like, oh, it's a beautiful day. And it was, I think if this day had happened about a year ago, I would have been like, this is so cold. But today I was actually commenting how warm it was. I think it was like high of 40 degrees. But I was like, yeah, it's awfully warm out.
It's all relative, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
It's kind of amazing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what's going on besides the weather?
Yeah. Let's see. So so I feel like there's some stuff going on, and I'm seeing it sort of out of the corner of my eye, sort of.
Very
so
good.
There's. I was like, I wanna call in. I'm not totally clear on what it is that's going on. But it's clear that there's sort of some kind of it's funny because it seems like both a campaign and there seems to be some successes going on.
So like conditioning is launching a campaign and you're recognizing some successes.
Yeah, it's almost like conditioning. There are some successes.
Mm-hmm.
And conditioning is on a campaign to convince me that it's actually a big that actually there are no successes, and instead actually things are really bad.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible. It's like Todd's practice. It's mm-hmm. just a mess.
Yeah.
Until you start going, well, what about this and what about this and what about this and what about this? Yeah.
It's kind of like. Conditioning has this idea about what success looks like, about what things would look like and how I would feel. You know, I guess we were doing this a bit in the email class, but like how it would feel like and what my life would look like if things were going really well.
Yes, and the bottom line definition is not anything you're ever going to experience. In
yeah.
other words, what,
yeah.
wherever you are and whatever is going on, conditioning just reorders the standards, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just reconfigures everything so that, not quite. Nope, that's not it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was listening to the beginning of the radio show and people were talking about successes and conditioning was like, yeah, but you don't have that going on. Your life is, and it was just like, what? Like,
it's
what?
It's so predictable, isn't it?
It is.
And so tedious. It's like, you know, when you're talking about it like that, and I'm sitting here listening, and the thing I can't get past is, what is the point of it? You know? I mean, that you... along with everybody else, okay, all the rest of us, but just you specifically, because you're talking right now. You know, that there's a voice, you're listening to a group of people talk about successes, and there's a voice in your head telling you what's wrong with you compared to that. I mean,
yeah.
Why? You know, what is that in aid of? It's just crazy. It's such a crazy thing to consider that's how we're built.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
It is. It is kind of crazy
yeah.
to consider. And yet it's what's going on.
Yeah, because it serves absolutely no good. It serves no good
because
purpose.
Yeah, it's like I thought you were going to say it serves no purpose, but it does serve a purpose, but it
mm-hmm.
does serve no good.
Yeah. Yeah, it serves a purpose of making you feel bad
mm-hmm.
when you're not paying attention, convincing you that there's really something wrong with you and your life isn't working and you should be unhappy.
Mm-hmm. Almost that I am unhappy. That's the campaign right now. It's like that I am unhappy and that things aren't working and... But that's not true.
Right. Well, you sit down with your journal and go, okay, let's get specific. You know, what is not working? What is not working? And then it says, well, you know, this isn't as good as it could be. Or you weren't as jolly there as you might have been. You know, so it's all of these qualifiers that shade it in such a way that, again, if you're not paying close attention, you're meant to believe that it's making a valid point when actually it's not. You know, you're not as happy as you should be. What the heck does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
And yet we'll fall for it.
Yeah, there's one of the things that is trying right now is it has these standards, like these beliefs about what good people do and what, you know, what I in particular need to do in order to be good. And then there's this process that happens where like anxiety comes up, I get identified and I do this stuff that isn't good people. Conditioning has somehow created this system, this belief system, where if I cross this line, then I'm no longer a good person. I'm
you know, can I stop you right there and just make a little suggestion?
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you trust me?
I do trust you.
Okay. Well, then hear me when I say this. You are a good person. And so whatever you do is part of what a good person does. Now, you may identify behaviors that you have that don't serve you. So if you decided for the next month that you're going to eat a gallon of ice cream every night.
Yeah.
Okay, that wouldn't really take very good care of you.
Yeah.
But it would still be in the sphere of what a good person does. Because you are a good person, and it would be what you are doing.
Yeah.
You see the difference?
I do see the difference.
Yeah.
And that's the thing I feel like I've been kind of seeing a little bit. You know, it's like that process is going on, and there is a sense that what you're saying is true.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't. It's just not negotiable. It's not,
yeah.
You know, it's not, that's not a decision that needs to be made. The verdict is already in. You can't be tried again for the same set of crimes. You have been found innocent
mm-hmm.
of those charges. It's a really important, it's a critical thing to get if we're going to drop that outrageously tedious conversation. Because otherwise, as you've noticed, you know, every step a person takes. Well, are you a good person now? Bad person. Are you a good person or are you a bad person? You're a bad person. Bad person because you did that. Okay, well, if you do that, you'd be a good person. No, we're not having that conversation anymore. I am a good person, and this is what I'm doing. Now, I just look to see, does this make me happy? Yes. Oh, well, then I'm going to continue that. Does it make me unhappy? Well, then I'm going to work at not doing that because it doesn't seem to make me happy. Maybe next year it'll make me happy. Right now it doesn't.
Yeah, Sherry, this is true. Yeah, this is big, though.
Mm-hmm.
It's like this is going on all the time.
All the time with almost everybody, I would guess. And it's so phony when we really see it for what it is. I mean, you cannot, it's just not, again,
yeah.
It's one of those, it's just not possible. A person doesn't go from being a good person to a bad person based on some behavior.
Mm-hmm. It's so funny because right now it's like, yes, that's true. And there's also a sense that when I'm in it, it really does feel like that.
Yeah.
It really does feel like, you know, this is it. It's like a trial.
Well, And you know, when we realize how much of our conditioning is involved in this, that's what childhood is like. I mean, you go from being a good child to a bad child in the space of 10 seconds, depending on whether your parents are pleased with you or not. And we just never get the information that there are helpful and unhelpful behaviors, but they have nothing to do with whether or not you are a good or a bad person.
Yeah, and it's interesting because one of the things I've been looking at is this, it's like there is this knowledge of seeing how unhelpful or helpful behavior
mm-hmm.
versus good person, bad person
mm-hmm.
behavior
mm-hmm.
and how one has really nothing, I mean, it's like, it's the same, it's almost like the same, I'm talking about the same exact
yes.
decision,
yes.
and yet it's a completely different, it's like almost as soon as I start to try to talk unhelpful, helpful behavior, conditioning wants to turn it into good person, bad person
oh.
behavior.
Immediately.
So immediately. It's like it just wants to just switch the conversation and it'll convince me that it's the same thing because it's actually, you know, the same content, but the process around the content is just so different.
Mm-hmm. As different as night and day, as different as light and dark.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, keep an eye on it because it's a slippery little devil, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Sherry.
Are we going to see you soon?
Yes.
Good. Looking
very
forward
excited.
To it.
Me too.
All right. Take care.
Thanks.
Good night.
Okay, bye. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Anna. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, it's after 6 p.m.
I know. I don't know how that happens to us time after time after time.
Yes, yes.
But it was very fun getting to talk to these folks.
It was indeed. And we're leaving a couple of friends on hold here, and I encourage them to call us early next week.
It worked for Jeffrey and Todd.
Yes, it did. And I'm grateful for everyone who makes this show possible.
Mm-hmm. Me too, Michael. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Good night.
Good night.